welcome. I'd like to thank you all for holding and inform you that your lines are in a listen-only during today's conference until the question-and-answer session. At that time, to ask a question, you'll press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Today's call is being recorded. If we have any objections, you may disconnect. Now I'd like to turn to Tom Skinner. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Ed, and thank you all for joining us today for this telebriefing where Dr. Ann Schuchat and Secretary Mary Selecki are going to give us an overview of the current situation, pertussis or whooping cough situation in the United States as outlined in today's MMWR, which hopefully you all have. Dr. Ann Schuchat is the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases here at CDC. Her name is spelled A-N-N-E. Her last name is spelled S-C-H-U-C-H-A-T. She is an MD, and she'll provide some opening remarks that give us sort of a national perspective on pertussis. Ms. Selecki is the secretary of the Washington State Health Department. Her name is spelled M-A-R-Y. Her last name is spelled S-E-L-E-C-K-Y. She will provide us with some information specific to Washington, and then we'll get to your questions and answers. Dr. Schuchat?
Thanks so much, Tom, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Today we're releasing an MMWR report on whooping cough or pertussis on the epidemic that's occurring in Washington State. What's happening in Washington State is a reflection of the larger national picture with this very difficult to control disease. Today, I want to give an update on what we're seeing regarding whooping cough cases in the U.S., and above all, I want to urge vaccination for pregnant women and anyone who will have contact with babies. We're seeing a substantial increase in pertussis cases in the United States and in individual states like Washington. There's a graph that looks back at pertussis reported cases since 1922 that I think the media have gotten access to, and so you might want to look at that while I make a few more comments about what's going on. Many states are seeing higher than expected cases of pertussis. As you all know, Washington declared an epidemic. As of today, nationwide, nearly 18,000 cases have been reported to CDC. That's more than twice as many as we had at the same time last year. In fact, it's more than we've had in each of the past 5 years. We may be on track for record high pertussis rates this year. We may need to go back to 1959 to find a year with as many cases reported by this time so far. So there is a lot of pertussis out there, and I think there may be more coming to a place near you. Unfortunately, so far this year, 9 babies have died from whooping cough, according to the reports we've got through today. That's one more than is in the MMWR, but since the MMWR went to print, I learned of an additional case. Pertussis is most dangerous for babies and very young children. In general, more than half of babies younger than 1 year of age who get the disease need to be cared for in the hospital. Pertussis occurs in waves. You can see this on the graph. It occurs in waves with peaks that occur around every 3 to 5 years. Not all states will have peaks in exactly the same time, though we may be hitting one of those cycles where we're in an upswing around the country. While it's a cyclical disease, a gradual and sustained increase in pertussis has been seen in the U.S. after we reached historic low levels in the 1970s. There are probably several factors that contribute to this slow increase that we're seeing, including immunity provided by the pertussis vaccine, which can wane over time. But there may also be increased reporting or recognition, increased diagnoses, a number of factors that make it complicated to compare the 1970s with the information that we have today. 2010 was our last peak year nationally. We had over 27,000 reported cases that year and 27 deaths, 25 of which occurred in infants. When we have these waves occurring, we look at trends and try to understand how we can best reduce the impact of disease. So in this current wave, nationally, we're seeing the highest rates of pertussis in infants younger than 1 year of age. About a half of these cases are in babies under 3 months of age. And that's because those very young babies are too young to be protected by vaccines that they start getting at 2 months of age. Their protection instead depends on the immunity of the people around them, especially pregnant women, their mothers. That's why we strongly urge pregnant women and all people who will be around babies to be vaccinated. Infants often get pertussis from a family member or a household member. We're also seeing high rates in older children as well. We're seeing high rates among children 10 years of age. We realize that by age 10, immunity can wane from the early childhood vaccines that kids get. And that's why we've ended up recommending a booster of pertussis-containing vaccines at 11 to 12 years of age. The booster is called Tdap, or T-D-A-P. Of particular note in today's MMWR are the increased rates in Washington State in adolescents 13 and 14 years of age. We're also seeing that increase nationally in the 13 and 14-year age group. That's different than what we saw in previous waves of pertussis. The increased number of cases among 13 to 14-year-olds is a concern we're looking at in detail. There are a number of possible causes, including how long protection from the vaccine lasts, if the switch we made in the types of vaccines we use in young children, a switch that we made back in 1997 from a whole cell pertussis vaccine to the current acellular pertussis vaccine, might have done something to impact how long the vaccines last. We're investigating these questions in detail in collaboration with state health departments, including Washington. And I'd be happy to go into more explanation in the questions and answers. Pertussis vaccine remains the single most effective approach to prevent infection. It's critical to protect infants and others at high risk. I want to stress that unvaccinated children are at 8 times higher risk of getting pertussis compared to children who are fully vaccinated. We've reproduced that information recently in a study in California. It's really important to stress that not being vaccinated really increases your risk of getting pertussis. Vaccinated children who get pertussis typically have a milder course. They typically have milder symptoms, a shorter illness, and a reduced risk of the severe outcomes like hospitalization. They're also less infectious in spreading the illness than unvaccinated children. There are two types of vaccines currently recommended to protect against pertussis. Both are acellular pertussis vaccines. The first is called D as in diphtheria, T as in tetanus, A, P as in pertussis, or DTAP. That's recommended for infants and young children in a 5-dose series at 2, 4, and 6 months of age, at 15 through 18 months of age, and at 4 through 6 years of age. The second currently licensed vaccine that we use in the U.S. is called TDAP or Tdap. This is a booster dose recommended for everyone at age 11 to 12 years. In addition, it's recommended for pregnant women and any adult who has not had a pertussis booster already. Vaccines have done a good job at reducing the incidence of pertussis, but our pertussis vaccines are not perfect. They don't provide protection for as long as we wish they would, and this adds to our challenges during these times of increased disease. We wish we had better ways of controlling pertussis, but remember that without vaccines, we know that we would have hundreds of thousands of pertussis cases each year. So given how dangerous pertussis is for babies, preventing infant deaths from the disease is our primary national goal. CDC continues to recommend that all children and adults get fully vaccinated to prevent infection and to protect infants. Getting Tdap is especially important for pregnant women and those who will be around infants, grandparents, brothers and sisters, childcare workers, healthcare providers. However, in 2010, only 8% of adults had any history of receiving a Tdap booster. And I know that we can do better than this. We need to do better than this. We're also asking clinicians who see patients with persistent cough or who may have been exposed to the disease to consider pertussis as a diagnosis. Be proactive with treatment, especially with pregnant women, infants, and others who are around infants. Before we handle questions, I want to turn things over to Secretary Selecki so we can learn more about what's going on in Washington. And I just want to say they've been doing a tremendous job in Washington in responding to a very difficult situation.
Thank you, Dr. Shukat. This is Mary Selecki, and thank you for having me on the call today. The whooping cough situation in Washington State has been incredibly challenging. We're seeing the largest number of cases in our state since the early 1940s. When I first declared a pertussis epidemic on April 3rd of this year, we had 640 cases. As of the end of last week, we had more than 3,000. That's more than three times the number of cases we had all of last year, 2011. Let me put that in perspective for you. Washington had just over 200 cases at this time last year, July of 2011. Most counties in our state have reported cases, and for every case we know about, we expect there are many people out there who have pertussis and don't know about it. My biggest concern, as Dr. Shukat said, is for babies. They're the ones that get hit the hardest, usually the sickest, and many times end up hospitalized. We've had no deaths in this current epidemic. However, two children under 1 year old died from whooping cough last year, and two others died in 2010. Over the last few months, I've met with families who had gone through this. It's incredibly hard. In many cases, babies get this illness from their mothers or others who are close to them. It's absolutely tragic. We're using every tool we have to fight this. With help from the federal government and our governor's emergency fund, we bought and distributed 27,000 doses of Tdap vaccine to local communities for uninsured adults, and we just ordered more. We're focusing most of our efforts on getting adults and pregnant women vaccinated because they're the ones that usually spread this to the little ones. We're pushing information out to healthcare providers to make sure they're informed and that they encourage their patients to get vaccinated. You know, us adults don't think about our vaccinations, and I hope every one of you who is listening, whether you are in Washington State or not, get a Tdap booster. That's really essential, and that will help us all. We're working closely with our local health partners and our American Indian tribes who are tracking the disease and helping us get the vaccine out into the communities. We've been very aggressive in informing the public. Our governor, Chris Gregoire, provided money from her emergency fund to help pay for vaccines and get the information out. Our media campaign includes TV, billboard, bus ads, social media ads, and radio spots featuring real families that have been directly affected by whooping cough. The message is best coming from them. Their lives, their families were affected. Reports from our health plans in our state, along with the information from our immunization registry, show the number of adults getting the Tdap vaccine is way up from last year, but I want more. People are clearly getting the message and taking steps to protect families, themselves, and babies in our state, but we need more help from every adult in Washington State and everywhere around the nation. You know, epidemics don't start or end overnight, and we have a lot of work ahead of us. We've seen a slight slowdown in the number of reported cases recently, but it's too early to draw any conclusions from that. So we continue to encourage adults and pregnant women to get vaccinated. And if we use up the vaccine we have now, that's a good thing. We'll order more. Thanks to Dr. Shukat and the CDC for the help they're giving us. They've sent an epi team out to help us with the investigation and have also had big help in developing our media campaign and getting the word out quickly. So I want to conclude with 3 points. You're seeing public health in action. This is the work we do every day to make a safer and healthier country. It also shows why it's vital to invest in the public health system at the federal, state, and local level. And third, vaccination is still the very best protection. It can protect babies from getting very sick and possibly dying. That's why we want everyone to make sure they're up to date on their whooping cough vaccines. Thank you very much, Dr. Shuket.
Okay. Thank you, Secretary Selecki. Ed, I believe we're ready for questions. If we could have reporters ask one question, and we'll allow a follow-up question if necessary, and then we'll move to the next question. So, Ed, we're ready to begin.
Thank you, sir. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. You'll be prompted by our automated service to state your name to help with pronunciation. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question, star 2 to withdraw your question. Again, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question. And one moment, please. First one comes from Mike Stovey from the Associated Press. Sir, your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I'm curious about the U.S. experience as compared to what's happened in other countries. Have you all looked at, you probably have, other countries that got the vaccine, whether it was also in the 40s or whenever, and did it also go down and has also risen a bit in recent years as it has in the U.S.? And if the U.S. experience is different, why do you think that is?
Thanks, Mike. This is Ann answering the question. It's clear that the introduction of vaccines led to substantial reductions in pertussis, but it's important comparing countries' experiences to recognize that people track pertussis disease and outbreaks quite differently, and the kind of system for reporting and detection that we have here in the U.S. is not used in every other place. With that caveat, I can say that other countries that are similar to the U.S. have been experiencing high rates. In fact, Australia currently has rates of disease that are much higher than the U.S. rates. There have been outbreaks in Canada recently that have been characterized by high rates of disease in adolescents. It's really too soon to say whether the phenomena that we're seeing in Washington State and in the U.S. will be mimicked in other countries, but I would say there's good communication to share experience and compare notes and look for a way forward together. Next question.
Next question comes from Elizabeth White from USA Today. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my question. You say that the rates of illness are going up. Is this, and you also say that they're cyclical, is this just part of the cycle or is it related to efforts by some to encourage people not to be vaccinated?
Yeah, thank you for that question. We think there are many things going on. Pertussis is a cyclical disease, and the vaccines are not perfect, so even with increasing vaccination coverage, we expect to still have cycles. We think there are some unusual epidemiologic features to the recent outbreaks that have caused us to launch a more detailed investigation in Washington State, and waning of immunity or a weakening of waning of protection over time may be part of the story of what we're seeing. On the other hand, we know that people who are not vaccinated have about an 8 times higher risk of disease than people that are vaccinated, and we know there are places around the country where there are large numbers of people who aren't vaccinated. However, we don't think that those exemptors or unvaccinated people are driving this current wave. We think that's a bad thing that people aren't getting vaccinated or are exempting, but we can't blame this whole wave on that phenomena. Next question.
Next question comes from Tom Mao from LA Times. Your line is open.
Well, you said there are some unusual things epidemiologically about this. What kinds of things are you talking about here?
Well, if we look at the teenage group, what we see is that disease rates start to come up after after late childhood, you know, with this higher rate in 10-year-olds. And then we actually have a decrease in the 11- and 12-year-olds, but then again a higher rate in 13- and 14-year-olds. there's a lot going on in that age group that's a bit different than what we saw in the last wave several years ago. Part of it may be children in these teenage years are the first cohort of children who were exposed to the acellular pertussis vaccine for all of their early childhood doses. So the way that early childhood experience of vaccination goes might lead to some changes in the protection status in the teenage years. We also are in really the first phase of evaluating the Tdap booster dose that's given to 11 and 12-year-olds. So one of the issues out in Washington State will be to measure how well that's working. Is it giving us short-term protection? Is it lasting, or is it dropping off or waning? So the pattern of higher rates in 11, 13, and 14-year-olds is a bit different than what we've seen in the past. In the past, we just sort of saw rates going up in the adolescent group. Most of those data are from before we had the booster dose to work with. Next question.
Next question comes from Maggie Fox from NBC. Your line is open.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can review for us what the reasons were from going from the whole cell vaccine to the acellular vaccine and what the differences are in the immunity that each provides.
Yeah, thanks. That question is a great one, and it's going to take a fairly long answer. So let me say first off that whole cell pertussis vaccines are still widely used in many parts of the world, but in the U.S., we have not been using them since 1997. The whole cell pertussis vaccines were also different. Some companies' products performed differently than others, so it's difficult to give a precise estimate of how well they worked because they weren't all one thing. But we do know that the whole cell pertussis vaccines had a fairly high rate of minor and short-term side effects like fever and pain and swelling at the injection site. Those were fairly common reactions, and the acellular pertussis vaccines have a lower rate of the fever and transient side effects. There were also rare but serious neurologic adverse reactions, including chronic neurologic problems, that occurred among children who had recently received whole cell vaccine. However, studies have not been consistent about whether the vaccine actually caused those chronic neurologic problems, yet there was substantial public concern about them, and not just in the U.S., but in other countries, and that led to a concerted effort to develop a vaccine with an improved safety profile. We know that the acellular pertussis vaccines, much less fever and local reaction than the whole cell vaccines, the question of those neurologic issues is still not so clear. So the current acellular pertussis vaccines have a good safety record, and they are fairly effective. In young children, we think that within a couple years of vaccination, the DTaP series gives 95% protection, but by 5 years later, after the series, we think it wanes to about 70%. So that going down from 95% effectiveness to 70% may be why we see this increase in the older children or young teens. Next question.
Next question comes from Sheila Hager from Walla Walla Union Bulletin. Your line is open.
Thank you. Elizabeth echoed much of my question. I'm wondering if health officials are getting any sort of information from the never vaccinate folks, any leaders in that group, if you guys are hearing anything from them.
Secretary Selecki, do you want to say what's going on in Washington, or would you like...
Well, we have not, Sheila, this is Mary Selecki, and we have had no official contact from any group of folks. We certainly always get questions on our website about vaccinations, or people send us their opinions about vaccinations. But as we look at what's going on with whooping cough in our state right now, most of our kids are vaccinated, and indeed part of what we will be studying with the CDC is the long-term effects of that vaccination. Clearly, vaccination is still the most effective way to prevent childhood diseases and many other diseases for adults, but we have had no formal contact with anyone.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Dr. Shukit. Let me just add on. I have to say that I have been struck by the stories of people who have been suffering, particularly families whose babies have had a very severe pertussis illness, hospitalization, or even death. And I think that this whole outbreak we're seeing across the country is just such a reminder about why we need vaccines. So I think that question of what are parents saying, I think there's some fear out there because this is a bad disease, particularly in babies, and a reminder that we have so much more we can do in getting pregnant women vaccinated and anybody who's going to be around babies, as well as getting, you know, a baby who's ill into care fairly quickly. You know, just a reminder that we're seeing very high rates nationally compared with the past few years, and it's a really good time to make sure you and your family are up to date with your whooping cough vaccines. Next question.
Next question comes from Melinda Moyer from Discover Magazine. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my question. You mentioned the growing evidence that protection from the DTaP series wanes in, you know, three to five years. So how similar is the Tdap vaccine to DTaP in terms of how much protection it might provide? And is the CDC considering changing how frequently the Tdap booster is recommended for adolescents and adults to account for waning protection?
You know, the Tdap vaccine effectiveness is a centerpiece of what we'd like to be investigating in Washington State. It has been measured to be about 60 to 70% effective, but those measurements were carried out in children who had received their baby shots with the old wholesale vaccine. So whether the duration of protection or the short-term effectiveness is different in Tdap among teens who got a cellular pertussis vaccine as babies, we don't know yet. And that's one of the things we'll be looking at in Washington State. Apologize for how complicated these answers are. The pertussis vaccines are among our most complicated control efforts. You know, you need five doses as a young child and then a booster dose. It's a question of whether you'll need more booster doses during the adult years is something we'll also be looking at. So I would say that we're trying to make sure we learn as much as possible from Washington and other states right now to help provide the policymakers with good evidence to determine whether any changes in recommendations will be needed in the future.
Next. Our next question comes from Ruby DeLuna from KUOW Public Radio. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. So I just wanted to clarify the higher rates in older kids. Is that specific to Washington State, or are you seeing this nationwide as well?
Yeah, thanks for that question. We do see that trend nationwide as well. The MMWR actually includes a graph that compares the incidence in Washington and the incidence it includes the national incidence and then takes out Washington so you can make sure, you know, what's going on nationally. And you can see in that graph that basically there's the highest rate is in under 1-year-olds and then in 10-year-olds and 13 and 14-year-olds. Now, 11 and 12-year-olds still have much higher rates than do 5 or 6-year-olds, so there's certainly a lot going on in the teenage years, but understanding how much of what we're seeing in the 10 to 14-year-old age group is a short-term or longer-term benefit of the Tdap vaccine versus variations in what children got at the earlier years versus where they live and whether they're in one of these communities that's very hard hit right now. So nationally, we are seeing the 13 to 14-year-old as a group that we're quite interested in.
Thank you.
Next question.
Again, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. That's star 1 to ask a question. In one moment, please. We have a few that just came in. One moment, please. first one comes from Sharon Saylor from the Herald. Your line is open, ma'am.
Thank you for taking my question. Are there continuing studies the CDC will be doing on this issue, and can you talk a little bit about what those will be?
Yeah, thank you. The focus of study going forward is going to be field studies in the context of these increased rates of disease, working with state health departments, including Washington and others, to measure the vaccine effect, the effect of the vaccines that have been used in the field, to understand how effective the childhood series and the teenage dose is and how long the effect lasts. There'll also be further detailed look at the epidemiology, at risk factors for disease, to better define who's getting this disease these days. There are certainly academic groups doing other kinds of studies looking at clinical factors and so forth. But I would say our big focus right now is to understand the impact that the Tdap dose is having.
Ed, we'll take two more questions if there are two more questions.
Thank you. One moment, please. Next one comes from Kelly Koopmans from Como News. Your line is open.
Hi. My question may be more of a clarification. I understand that the rise in incidence among 13 to 14-year-olds is nationwide, but why in Washington specifically are we seeing such a rise in number of cases? Is there something unique happening in Washington State?
You know, I think, Secretary Selecki, would you like to say anything about Washington State?
Well, this is Mary Selecki, and as we have said before, this disease is very easy to catch, and it certainly has grabbed hold of our population here in Washington State. I think as a result of the number of cases, we've gotten the attention of many folks, and including those who have not been vaccinated. And that's one of the things that we certainly are discovering is that most adults don't even think about being vaccinated. The second thing we're learning from this is that and we appreciate the fact that the Centers for Disease Control will be doing a follow-up study with us, is how long does the effectiveness of the vaccine last? We hope that everyone is getting the message about vaccination, but the bug does have hold of Washington State, and we don't see a major slowdown happening right now.
Thank you. I'd just like to add on to that. I think that this is more than a Washington State story, and one of the reasons for us to hold the telebriefing is that we really think this disease is spreading around the country, and that wherever you live, you may be at risk, your family may be at risk. So especially pregnant women, please get vaccinated. Please make sure those who will be around your baby will be vaccinated. I think we're in for a tough year and a tough couple years, and really we'd like to mimic what Washington has done in getting the word out within their state. We think a number of states are at risk right now.
Ed, we'll take one more question.
Our last question comes from Judy Silverman from NBC News. Your line is open.
Hi. Could you tell us what the national coverage rate is of the childhood vaccine and the booster shot?
Yeah, sure. The booster shot in 13 to 17-year-old children is about 69% have gotten the Tdap, and that's from the 2010 data. If we look at toddlers, the 19 to 35-month-olds, four doses of DTaP series is about 84% of toddlers, and three doses is 95%. The last statistic to give you is for adults 19 to 64 years of age, and that comes from our National Household Interview Survey, and that was from 2010. That statistic was 8.2%. So only 8.2% of adults have gotten Tdap. We know we can do so much better, and I really hope, particularly in pregnant women, that you'll help us raise those rates.
Okay, Ed, that concludes our call. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. And for more information about pertussis and CDC's immunization recommendations, you can visit our website at www.cdc.gov/pertussis. And for more information about the Washington State epidemic, you may visit www.doh.wa.gov. Thanks again for joining us.
At this time, that will conclude today's conference. You may disconnect, and thank you for your attendance.